You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Sunday, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game podcast commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. The Rockets have now run their streak to 13 consecutive wins, amazingly, with a 115-111 win over the Milwaukee Bucks on Saturday night at Toyota Center. It was night two of a road back-to-back. Clint Capella did not play because of a bruised heel. Luke Bamute was out with the shoulder dislocation that's going to sideline him for at least another 10 days or so. James Harden almost didn't play because of a sore knee. But even with a seven-man rotation, really seven and a half, because Tarik Black did contribute some very valuable minutes in the fourth quarter, the Rockets just found a way, one of the more impressive, I would say, grittier wins of the entire season. And so with that, yes, they've won 13 in a row and 19 of their past 20. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal stretch of basketball. So salute to the Rockets for that. In our usual 3 points recap, I'm going to start not so much with an individual player, although in this we're going to talk about James Harden and Chris Paul a lot, but more about an overall team philosophy, which is grit. I think this was one of, and it wasn't just me, but one of the more impressive wins the Rockets have had all season long. And I'll read you a quote from Chris Paul in the locker room after the game. "This is one of our best wins of the season, to tell you the truth," said Paul. He noted that Harden had played hurt and the Rockets were fighting fatigue against a grinded-out Milwaukee team. Chris Paul, these comments were captured by ESPN's Tim McMahon, and just said that it showed the fight that our team has and the maturity our team has, according to Chris Paul. "You should have heard PJ Tucker at halftime and a number of other guys. We just kept talking about find a way, and we did." And that's what showed in this one, because I said Friday night during that Spurs game that this game stood out to me as very, very dicey. And that was before we knew that Clint Capella wouldn't play and that James Harden would be severely limited by the knee, which was injured on the takedown by Brandon Paul. I can't believe that wasn't a flagrant in the final minutes of the Spurs game Friday night when Harden kind of went awkwardly into the basket support and it kind of jarred him. But even before that, I thought this was a tricky one. Yes, it was night two of a back-to-back for Milwaukee as well, and they were on the road. But Milwaukee, you've got so many young legs when you combine Eric Bledsoe, Giannis the Greek Freak, John Henson, Chris Middleton. You've got a lot of younger guys throughout that roster that are capable of stepping up and giving you significant minutes on the back end of a back-to-back. Even Malcolm Brogdon, who I believe reigning rookie of the year, there's a lot of, and he had 20, there's a lot of youth on that Milwaukee team that is well-suited for that dynamic and well-suited to kind of make a more veteran Rockets team pay, especially a Rockets team that only has about a 7.5-man rotation. So this looked to me like a game on paper that certainly was going to be closer than the line. I believe the Rockets were favored by 10. But then, in addition to that, Milwaukee, I thought, played a very sound game, and the Rockets just had to dig deep, find a way, and ultimately they did, with Chris Paul taking them home yet again. It seems like he does that on such a regular basis these days, but two mid-range shots in the last minute. Thought it was so telling. After one of those, the cameras caught him saying, "I got you," and I assume he was referring to James Harden, because Harden obviously limited, admitted it after the game, that he almost didn't play, did not have his usual explosiveness. And Chris Paul, just as he's done throughout the week, has stepped up his game to an even higher level now that James Harden is limited. And, of course, that's what great teams do. I mean, if you want to make a run, the Rockets are now on pace to win more than 70 games. You've got to have more than one guy leading the way. A year ago, this was a certain loss. If James Harden did not have it on a given night, there was no one that was capable of stepping up the way Chris Paul is doing right now. And in this case, Paul, he scored 25 points, 7 of 13 from the field. It's amazing how Chris Paul continues to do this while shooting so efficiently. 6 assists, 5 rebounds. But of his 25 points, 23 came in the second half. It was a kind of a sloppy start. The game was tied at 55. But when the Rockets needed it, and especially in the fourth quarter, it was clear that James did not quite have his usual burst. So Chris Paul took them home, and salute to him for that. But before we get too much into Chris Paul, because yes, he was brilliant, folks, let's acknowledge what a warrior James Harden is, because as I said on Twitter after the game, I don't think he gets nearly as much credit as he deserves from the national media from the standpoint of his desire to win. I don't think the casual fan appreciates just how dedicated he is to his craft. because Fultz, this was a guy, I watched him at 6 o'clock. It was a 7 o'clock tip. I watched him at 6 o'clock come into the locker room. It didn't look good. He was hobbling. This was the knee, of course, that he injured in the takedown from Brandon Paul the night before. He put on a new padded undergarment. That's the best way I know to describe it. Essentially both legs. You probably saw the white sleeves for extra support. But he certainly was favoring the knee. The good news, the doctor said that it was structurally sound. It couldn't be worse if he played on it. And if you know James, then that's all he needs to hear. If he can't make it worse, he's going to play because that's what he does. But not only to play, but folks, to score 31 points, the highest on the team, in 39 minutes on the back half of a back-to-back, also had 6 rebounds and 5 assists. But to do that on essentially one leg, without even a single day off since the day of the injury, because of course when you have a collision like that, you're always going to feel worse the day after, and in this case, with it being a back-to-back, the Rockets did not even have the luxury of having a day off. That is incredible. And even though Chris Paul was the guy who took them home with the dagger shots late, the Rockets would not have been in position to close out the game with the lead for the majority of the fourth quarter if not for James Harden being so solid over the course of his 39 minutes. And it's been a hell of a week for James, and this happens over the course of an NBA season. There's so much of a grind to it, but it started last Saturday night, 8 days ago in Portland, when he got kneed in the back of the leg. I believe that was by Damian Lillard, or it might have been CJ McCollum. I can't remember exactly which one, but yeah. James took the knee in the back, so he was listed on the injury report Monday with a bruised calf. Then he got a pretty bad cold in the middle of the week, Wednesday and Thursday. And then this weekend, he had the back-to-back, which is hard in its own right. And then, of course, the knee injury from his body just kind of going awkwardly into the basket support Friday night into that Spurs game. So the past 4 games, James has not been himself. The efficiency has not been there. 8 of 21 is not out of this world for him. Yet at the same time, he's still out there grinding 39 minutes. I think especially with Capella and Bamute out, the Rockets needed all the bodies they could find because certainly they don't trust the guys at the end of that bench. That's pretty clear by now. And when the Rockets needed him, James was there, and he deserves so much credit for this. I agree wholeheartedly with Chris Paul's assessment that this was one of the better wins of the season all year long, just based on the factors that the Rockets had to overcome in this one. I think it reflects just how special the culture is in that locker room. And I do think it's important because folks say, well, it's 1 out of 82. Well, folks, if you're trying to catch the Golden State Warriors, arguably the most talented team in the history of the NBA, every game matters. Right now, the Rockets do have a 2-game lead in the loss column for the 1 seed with the tiebreaker. That's a big deal because as great as the Rockets are, they've won 13 in a row. Folks, the Warriors have won 8 in a row, and that's with Stephen Curry missing most in that stretch. The Warriors are incredibly, incredibly good. And if you want to get the 1 seed, every loss matters. You are going to have to stay at this clip almost all season long if you really want to make a run at that. Yet, at the same time, is it worthwhile? Yes, it is. Because when the Warriors are that good, folks, you need every advantage you can get. And in a best-of-7 playoff series, as far as I see it, there are a couple of variables that, if it can go either way, if both teams are really good, that I think are most important. It's A, get off to a good start in the series and potentially put some doubt on the part of the other team. And B, it's to get the swing games, which are usually game 5 because if the teams are really good, it's often 2-2, and then certainly game 7. And if you can have those games at Toyota Center rather than at Oracle, that's a huge, huge difference. People have asked me before what happened in game 6 when the Rockets did not show up in the second round against the Spurs last year. My opinion, I've said from the outset, that series was determined by what happened at the end of Game 5. I think that there was such, when the Rockets knew it was such a huge hurdle to get a Game 5 or a Game 7 on the road against a great team like the Spurs, and when they were so close in Game 5, did so much work, were right there, I think it was just overwhelming mentally to get that close, and yet think that even if you won Game 6, then somehow you'd have to do it all over again in Game 7. I'm not saying it's excusable, but folks, that's sports. That's the psychology of it. That's why, as I said, it's a big deal to try and make the other opponent doubt themselves, if you can, by establishing a foothold early in the series. And the fact that the Game 7 was in San Antonio, I think that had a lot to do with how Game 6 turned out because of just the sense from the Rockets that, is it worth it? Can we really do this? I think losing Game 5 the way they did put a lot of doubt in that locker room, and I don't think they responded as you would like them to. But in this case, if you're trying to beat the Warriors, arguably the most talented team in the history of the NBA, you need every advantage you can get. And yes, if you can get Game 5 in Game 7, in Houston, then you always know you have that in your back pocket. The flip side, you use the Rockets-Spurs example from a year ago. I think the Spurs realized there was a certain freedom they played with in Game 6, knowing that, hey, there's not that much pressure because, worst case, we have a home Game 7 waiting on us. That's a big deal. The Rockets last year, they went through all that in Game 5, played so well. Ultimately, for whatever reason, fatigue, lack of execution, whatever you want to cite, they didn't get it done. And I think when it got back to Game 6, there's such a psychological hold. It just seems daunting to try and scale that mountain again in a Game 7 that I think ultimately it affected their focus and effort in Game 6. I don't know if they'll ever admit that on the record, but that's just between us. That's what I think happened. And so, yeah, if you're the Rockets playing a team as good as the Warriors, then, folks, every game matters. And that's where James Harden gutting it out on Saturday. I know some are going to say, well, it's one regular season game in December. What does it mean? Well, folks, if you can get the one seed over the Warriors, it means a hell of a lot. To me, the one seed versus the two goes from you having a puncher's chance to a legitimate chance. This is not based on math. This is just my gut feel. But if there was a playoff series tomorrow between the two teams, and let's assume Stephen Curry does play, if the Warriors had home court, I would give the Rockets maybe a 10-15% shot to win 4 out of 7 if four of the games were in Golden State, especially Games 1, Game 2, Game 5, and Game 7, which, as I've said over a series, to me, those are the swing games. Those are the most important. As opposed to if Houston has home court, to me, are the Warriors still favored? Yes, I give them deference, even with this crazy streak for the Rockets, just based on their overwhelming talent, what they've proven in the past. But I'd say the Rockets have a 40% shot or so. All of a sudden, you go from just, you know, having a shot in the dark to, in my opinion, having a very, very real chance, a very legitimate path to win that series. So that's why every game matters. And I know there are injuries. I know it's frustrating. But when you're James Harden, and whether you play or not means that much in terms of the significance of winning or losing, then, yeah, A, it's great that he can get out there, and B, there's every reason for the Rockets to push the envelope with him as long as he can't make it worse. Now, if he can make it worse, then, yeah, you sit him down. You don't want to make the injury, if it's, you know, an MCL or meniscus or anything that can theoretically be made worse by playing on it, then, yes, you need to let that heal, even if you have to take the hit in the standings. But if it's not going to be made worse and James can handle the pain, then certainly the upside is there. There's a reason that you should be aggressive in playing him. They were on Saturday, and the team was rewarded accordingly. Now, for the second part of our 3 points recap, I want to talk about the exact nature of the injuries and what it means for the rotation. Because as we said, James Harden's going through the knee issue. The good news, Mike D'Antoni in his pregame comments, forgot to ask him about it, he confirmed that it was on the Brandon Paul play, but at the same time, he said there was no structural damage. Same way for Clint Capela, which is certainly a good sign. And I think I buy that, because when you look at what actually happened, it was a jarring impact from when Harden went into that basket support, his momentum, and especially any parts of his body that were sort of in an awkward position. They took which his knee was, because it was bent, then they take the brunt of the impact. But I did not see a lot of torque. I didn't see the type of bend that you usually associate with some sort of ligament injury. It seemed almost like, you know, a car crash, to put it nicely. And I'm certainly not trying to diminish the impact of it, because certainly you could have some pretty severe injuries from car crash, but it's about the impact rather than, say, a twist. And so in this case, that's why I do buy the idea that there's nothing structurally from the standpoint of a weakened ligament. I think it's more an impact of bruising, general soreness from the parts of his body that were most exposed, in the case of his knee, just because of the way his body was positioned when he went into that basket support. And when you attack the rim as relentlessly and hard as James Harden does, then, yeah, I use the car crash analogy for a reason, because he's going with some incredible force. And we've seen a lot of severe injuries, including the Paul George thing from the Team USA game a few years ago, going into those basket supports. So I think, yeah, you can honestly say the Rockets dodged a bullet to an extent with that. And I do probably buy the line of thinking that there's not really a long-term concern to making it worse. But it sounds like, if you read Tim McMahon's column on ESPN.com after the game, that Harden's going to be playing in pain for a while. And the good news is that he has a nice pain tolerance. But the bad, it takes until at least, I would say, the end of this week before you even get 2 off days in a row. And I think that's going to give you the best chance to heal it. Unfortunately, it would have been better if this injury had happened, say, a week ago when you had, or a couple weeks ago when you had that stretch of one game in 8 days because you had all those off days. Now, the Rockets, you don't have any immediate back-to-backs for a while, but they do have a game every other day for this homestand. I think the next time you get multiple days off is between the 22nd, that's this Friday, the last game of the homestand, and then the Christmas Day game, night game, I should say, at Oklahoma City. So playing every other day, that may not be too much of a chance to rest it, but the silver lining, you're not too far away. First off, the three teams that you finish this homestand with, the Jazz, the Lakers, the Clippers, it's not exactly murderer's row. And then between the Clippers and the Celtics, you play the Clippers on the 23rd and the Celtics on the 28th, you only have one game, and that's the Christmas night game in Oklahoma City. So you basically have at least five days off, basically 6 days if you count all the time until you actually get on the court that Thursday night in Boston. That's a TNT nationally televised game. You essentially have one game in 6 days. So I think that's a stretch where Harden can get the rest he needs to get it right. This week, I think he's going to be trying to grind it out as best he can. Hopefully Chris Paul stays hot. Upside is that Chris has certainly done that. I believe he scored 20-plus points in the last six games. That's the first time he's had six-plus games with 20-plus points since the first six games of the 2009 to 2010 season. So for those of you wondering if Chris Paul at 32 years old is over the hill, which, again, if you looked at his numbers from last season, then there's no way you would have thought that. But for more casual fans that haven't watched him thinking at 32, is he over the hill? The answer, absolutely not. Of course, that's gonna help James get through his injury, and it has this past week. Because, again, this isn't new. I mean, this injury, specific one, is new for James, but he was kneed in the calf in the Portland game. He was fighting a cold Wednesday and Thursday, so it's been a while since we've seen James at 100%. Now, he does know how to pick his spots, certainly last night, 31 points. There were moments he hit four threes, 40% from behind the arc. He's still good enough that for a minute or two, he can kick it into a high gear, just like the last 5 minutes of that, not Oklahoma City, New Orleans game on Monday when the Rockets were down 13 points late in the third and ended up rallying a personal 12-2 run in the final 3:45 by James Harden to close it out. He's capable of giving that to you in a short burst, but over the balance of games, he's going to need more help from his teammates, certainly Chris Paul. And the good news, Chris Paul seems to be very much in rhythm right now with, again, 20-plus points in his past six games. The other interesting aspect of this to me, when you look at the Rockets' injuries, is the trickle-down effect to the rest of the rotation, because it's not just James. Thankfully, James, despite the injury, he is able to play, even if he's somewhat limited. But Luke Bamute, Clint Capella are not. Now, one positive from this, Capella's injury, it's a bruised heel, was downplayed. They don't think he's going to miss very much time. I think it's more with Capella, they're going to err on the side of caution a little bit more than James, just because with Clint, when you have a big man, there's so much of a natural pounding that goes on to the feet of a big man, especially when you play with pace the way the Rockets do. Just think back to, the Yao Ming days. I'm certainly not comparing Clint to Yao in terms of his feet being brittle, but it's just natural when you have a guy that's that big, that powerful, feet are not really designed to handle that sort of continued stress. So when you have, especially your big man, undergoing that much stress, the Rockets are going to err on the side of caution, and I completely understand why. Now again, as with James, D'Antoni says it's nothing structural, just a bruise, but with Clint, it's just the nature of his position, in my opinion, you're going to be a little more cautionary. And then you have, of course, Luke Bamute missed his second consecutive game after, I guess, 2.5 straight, after dislocating his shoulder at the end of the first half of the Charlotte game on Wednesday. And if you want some good news, I watched Luke Bamute come into the locker room on Saturday. First, he's still around the team. That's always a good sign. If someone's hurt and they're expecting a lengthy absence, many times they're not even going to show up. So it's definitely a short-term absence when the guys are still there and around the team. But beyond that, folks, if I didn't know better, I wouldn't think there was anything wrong with him. There's no sling. He's moving his arms around. He seems comfortable. There's no pain. So I think we can safely say the Rockets dodged a bullet with that. If it were worse, it certainly could have been a season-ending type thing, as we discussed on Wednesday. But Luke Bamute, he went to the doctor. They largely cleared him. It sounds like this is a 2 to 3 week injury, and they're hoping closer to two. And from what I'm seeing, again, there's certainly going to be a learning curve when it comes to getting back on the floor and shooting. But the good thing with Luke is that the defining element to his game, his defense, actually is not that dependent on that shoulder. I think because it's a right shoulder and he is a right-handed player, there's going to be some sort of adjustment to shooting again, especially from distance. But in terms of the defense, the versatility, the things you think of most when you get Luke Bamute, folks, I think he's going to be able to give that to you from day one whenever he comes back. And that's good because the trickle-down effect to the rest of the rotation, boy. Saturday night, it was 7.5 men, and they only got 7.5 because of Tarik Black playing in the fourth quarter. First three quarters, it was essentially a seven-man rotation. Ended up with Trevor Ariza playing 42 minutes, P.J. Tucker playing 38. Rockets actually did not start Nene in absence of Capella. They started Ryan Anderson at the center spot and P.J. Tucker at the four because the Bucks are so athletic on that front line with Giannis, with John Henson in the middle, that the Rockets wanted to err on the side of athleticism. But P.J. at 38 minutes, Trevor Ariza at 42, Eric Gordon at 30. We did ask Mike D'Antoni pregame about the stamina issues, about Ariza's usage, and one thing that was interesting to me, he pushed back at the idea, he made it clear that he's not afraid to play Trevor Ariza 40-plus minutes, which he's now played two straight games at 41 and 42 minutes on a back-to-back. And that's something normally you would worry about. It's something I've said in the past, but Mike D'Antoni feels pretty strongly that with Trevor Ariza, they talked about it with him, they brought it with the doctors, that he's able to handle higher minutes, the workload, at a rate that other players simply are not. And D'Antoni talked about it before the game. He referenced it in the context of both Ariza but Harden as well, that their durability is so undervalued because they're able to play minutes that 90% of players simply can't, or at least play minutes without seeing a decrease in production. I will say with Ariza, there's often been some inconsistency with his shot over the years. So I've said in the past, I've tried to draw a correlation between playing too many minutes and then him going through a downstretch. It may not be that easy. I would say, especially with his form, Trevor's always had, even when his minutes have not been through the roof, a little bit of peaks and valleys. It sounds like that's what Mike D'Antoni believes. I still think, in general, 40-plus minutes is too much for anyone. However, I guess you could argue in this back-to-back, there's a situation of, well, the Spurs, you had Kawhi Leonard, the Bucks, you had Giannis, and you needed Trevor Ariza's length against those guys. And that's where I think losing Bob Mute means the most, because, P.J. Tucker, Eric Gordon, you just don't have that length that you do with Ariza and Bob Mute to throw against the ultra-long wings. And so I think that's one reason why Ariza has stayed out there longer. Another reason, Ryan Anderson just did not give them enough on Saturday night. He played 23 minutes, did not score. 0 of 4 from 3, did not do anything in terms of inside the arc, had 4 rebounds, all were on defense. He was very valuable on Friday night. As I said, his first double-double of the year, 10 and 12, had 6 offensive rebounds, but that goes back to the Rockets looking at that San Antonio game as, essentially a playoff game, just like the opener in Golden State. As I said, they wanted that one. On night 2 of a road back-to-back, unfortunately, Ryan did not have that same level of energy. I don't think it's reasonable to expect him to be that active on the glass every single night, especially in a back-to-back scenario. And so I think that further tied the hands of the Rockets to where Ariza, Tucker, you had to kind of max out those guys' minutes. If there's a silver lining to this, it's that they are drawing a hard line with Eric Gordon. I think in the past, even when Gordon had to play a lot in the absence of Chris Paul, you always heard Mike D'Antoni acknowledging, he never used the phrase point of diminishing returns, but certainly you heard him talk about the minutes. And with Eric, everything from his injury history just to the decline in efficiency we saw in the second half of the year last year, I think it's very clear that even in a short rotation, they are capping him at about 30 minutes. They don't want him to get to the point in the second half of this season that he was in the second half of last year. So it's not that the Rockets are, and Mike D'Antoni, are turning a blind eye to the issues of minutes distribution and overextending guys. They're very aware of that. It's just they think that Trevor Ariza is the exception to the rule. And again, I can't tell them 100% that they're wrong. I do have some reservations with it, but it's not like they're going out and overextending everyone per se, because no one else is in the 40s, and Eric Gordon was actually held at 30 despite you really only having seven guys. So I don't think it's a problem overall in terms of Mike D'Antoni's philosophy. I think it just comes down to how they view Trevor, and we'll have to watch his shooting percentages. Wasn't great on Saturday, 4 of 11 from the field, but he did have 7 rebounds. Thought his defense on Giannis was pretty good. So I'm not going to say that his energy was not there, that affected his shot, because it certainly did not affect him in other areas of the game. But I think it's clear at this point that in terms of this short rotation that the Rockets are dealing with for the time being, I think the Rockets see Ariza as the exception to the rule. And you just have to hope that they're right. It's not like they're making this decision themselves. They talked with Ariza about it. They talked with the doctors, but certainly it'll be something to monitor in the days ahead. I would say maybe there's an opportunity to take the minutes down a smidge, closer to 38, 39, now that you're not playing a super dynamic wing player in regards to the next couple of games, the Jazz, the Lakers on Monday and Wednesday, and hopefully Ryan Anderson with a day off can give you more than 23 minutes, because if Ryan's hitting, then all of a sudden you're not going to feel as boxed in terms of who can play those minutes at the four and even the five spot in some cases, with Ryan Anderson starting there with the Rockets' small ball lineup in the absence of Capella. Not sure if Capella's back on Monday, but again, nothing structural. The Rockets aren't really worried about that long term. So I would worry less about Capella and more about just the downstream effects to the rest of the rotation, what it means for them. But the other thing to keep in mind with it is Luke Bamute, this is not going to be a long-term injury. So even if this is, say, overextended, you're looking at really just being overextended for about a week. Because then, like I said, once you get through this Friday and that Clippers game, you only have one game in the next 6 days between the 22nd and the 28th. So that's a lot of time off to let guys rest up. That's more time, almost a full week, for Luke Bamute to rest without missing more than one game. So I think there's a reasonable scenario you can paint where Luke Bamute could be back that Thursday night game in Boston, that TNT game on the 28th. That would be 2 weeks and a day from when his injury was suffered the Wednesday night against Charlotte. And if that's the case, you only have four more games to get through. The three this week to close out the 7-game homestand, and then the Christmas Day game in Oklahoma City. So the good news is that even if you worry about Ariza and a few of these guys being slightly overextended, PJ at 38 minutes is certainly high for him, although he did have a double-double, 10 points, 10 rebounds, and PJ was plus 10 in his 38 minutes, which is the best of anyone in the Rockets, which certainly speaks to his overall contributions, particularly defensively and with his unique brand of physicality. But if you're worried about those guys, it's just four games, and I think there's a very reasonable shot that, especially based on what I've seen from Luke, that he's back on Thursday the 28th or shortly thereafter at the end of this month. And then once that happens, it's going to be pretty easy for the rest of the rotation to fall in line. The last of our 3 points recap that I want to touch on is a name that it's kind of correlated to the injuries as well, but I think deserves his own section, and that's Tarik Black. Because Tarik, he essentially didn't play until the fourth quarter. I believe he snuck in late in the third. I'm looking that up right now. But folks, Tarik ended up playing 12 minutes, 4 points, one rebound, nothing to write home about, but it was the level of energy that he played with. The dunks were just of the thundering variety, but he set solid screens, he was active on the court, and give credit to Mike D'Antoni. The reason I bring it up is that I think it's more important than just Tarik Black. It shows a willingness from Mike D'Antoni, in my opinion, to adjust to the situation and not just rely on his veterans. And I think that's so big over the grind of 82 games, because you look at last year, the Rockets would not have gotten off to that 31-9 start without the contributions from the likes of Sam Dekker and Montrezl Harrell. So to see call on Tarik Black again, this is not a guy making the minimum. They signed him for the biannual exception for a reason. This is a guy who's been proven at the NBA level, even if he hasn't gotten a shot this year. Actually, Tarik didn't even check in until the until the start of the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden he played the rest of the way, I believe. So yeah, that's a pretty amazing stat line. And you know, I give D'Antoni a lot of credit, because in the past that's something that he has been a little hesitant to do. But in this case, I think it was warranted. In the first half, the reason it's so interesting, Nene kept the Rockets afloat. Nene had 16 points in the first half. And if you look at the game as a whole, Nene, in 20 minutes, he had 16 points, 4 rebounds on 7 of 9 shooting in 20 minutes. That sounds great. But in reality, it all came in the first half. The second half, I think it's the course of, you know, a 35-year-old, they're certainly trying to manage his minutes. But at this point in his career, especially in December, he's not really conditioned to go for 25 to 30 minutes a night. And Nene, I think he emptied his tank in that great first half, which was nice because it kept the Rockets afloat, tied at the half, even though they didn't play that well. James Harden, Eric Gordon in particular, got off to a slow start in the first half. Both picked it up in the second half. I thought Eric especially, he attacked the rim, which was really great to see. This was the first game of the homestand that Eric did not shoot well from behind the arc, 1 of 5, but he was 5 of 10 overall, which tells you he was 4 of 5 from inside the arc, and his attacking was a big part of it, especially in the second half. But in the first half, yeah, Nene was great, and he's the veteran, and he kept the Rockets afloat. He was a scoring machine near the bucket. Second half, it didn't turn out that way, and I thought one of the more telling sequences, I believe it was late in the third quarter, when Nene had a clear lane to the bucket for, well, you'd like to think a dunk, at a worst case, a layup, and he got rejected by the rim. The lift just was not there. The energy just wasn't there. It was trending poorly for the Rockets, and it just felt like the Rockets needed a shot in the arm, and that's what Tariq Black provided. And again, I know 4 points, one rebound, one assist, those are not eye-popping numbers in 12 minutes, but if you watch the game, with the energy that he played with, for a team that's on the second end of a back-to-back, and even amongst those players playing, had a lot of guys either playing massive minutes, like Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, or in the case of James Harden, massive minutes, and playing hurt. The Rockets, they were lethargic. They needed a shot in the arm. That's what Tariq Black provided. And again, it goes beyond just the traditional box score stats. It's the energy he plays with. It's how sound the screens are. I thought a couple of the big shots, including one from Harden, were set up by just tremendous screens up front from Tariq Black, in which he took care of the defender without fouling. He set himself. Just a very professional game. But I would say more than being a statement about Tariq Black, I think it's a statement about Mike D'Antoni realizing that, you know, you can run guys into the ground. I think that's an important observation because we talk about this. Again, I don't think they're overly worried about the minutes because Capella, Luke Bamute, these are not long-term injuries. It's not like you're going to be overextending guys for a while. But even if they are veterans, even if you trust those guys, and that's been the knock on D'Antoni throughout their career, that he can trust his veterans too much and he can run them into the ground, the rotations are too short, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes you need a shot in the arm, and in the case of this Rockets-Bucks game, that shot in the arm was Tariq Black down the stretch. And so, yeah, you give credit for Tariq. It takes a lot of professionalism when you're not playing consistently to be ready when your number is called. It's that Montrezl Harrell role from a year ago. But you know what? You go back to especially November and December, Montrezl Harrell was important in that role a year ago, and Tariq Black, at least for one night, proved capable of stepping into that himself. And so, yeah, kudos to him for staying ready. He's a pro. But beyond that, kudos to Mike D'Antoni for showing trust, because in this case, it's exactly what the Rockets needed. It's not as easy to do at, say, the forward and guard spots. I think that, you know, if you were going to trust someone that's not in the regular rotation, I think the closest thing would be Troy Williams, but he's out now with an MCL sprain, so it's not really that easy for him at the other spots. I think generally for the next week, the rotation is what it is, and they're just going to have to make the most of it. But down the line, once you get healthy, then I think it's something to remember for later in the year, January, February, that, you know, it's a good sign that Mike D'Antoni is willing to show that trust in a guy like Tariq Black because, well, certainly it could be Tariq Black again in the future, but who knows? Maybe you get a shot to a guy like Troy Williams, Joe Chi, whoever it may be down the line if the Rockets are a little lethargic in a game and need a spark and the regulars just don't seem, for whatever reason, to have it. In this case, the obvious reason, it being the second night of a back-to-back and combined with all the injuries. Anyway, I think that'll about wrap it up as far as our takeaways from Saturday night's game. So I will leave things right there. As always, thanks to you guys for listening to us here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can do so at Locked On Rockets. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose, or you can email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, if you haven't subscribed to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Megaphone, wherever you want to listen to your podcast, just search for Locked On Rockets. Hell, you can search for Locked On Texans, too, because we've got a great Locked On podcast network. Texans have a game at Jacksonville today where they can play spoiler. If you want to hear the Texans side of things, my buddies Robert Land and Brian Patterson do a great job with Locked On Texans. But yeah, there's a lot of great content across the Locked On Podcast Network, so subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Subscribe to any other show for the NBA or NFL or the league as a whole. We have shows covering Locked On NBA and Locked On NFL, covering both leagues from a national perspective as well. But yeah, subscribe to us, leave us 5-star reviews, because folks, that's the best way that we can appeal to advertisers, and it's advertisers that are responsible for us being able to bring content to you like Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. Once again, the happy final from Toyota Center. 115-111, Rockets over Milwaukee. Wasn't always pretty. James Harden grinding through a tough knee injury. Doesn't think that he can make it worse. No structural damage. It is sore after his collision with the basket support Friday night's game, but 31 points in 39 minutes, 8 of 21. That's a team high 31. Chris Paul, 25 points, 23 of those coming in the second half. He had a couple of big mid-range shots late. And by the way, Chris Paul now 14-0 in his first 14 games in Houston. According to ESPN stats and info. That makes him the first player to do that, to start and win his first 14 games with a new team since starters were first indicated in box scores in 1970. So yes, it's been a phenomenal start to the year for Chris Paul and James Harden. And I think the best part of all is the chemistry, the camaraderie that they have with one another. As I said, you could see down the stretch last night, Chris Paul saying, "I got you," referring to James Harden, obviously limited by the knee. But as has happened throughout the week, because this isn't the first injury for James, between the calf injury, now the knee, having a cold in the middle of the week, it hasn't been peak MVP version of Harden, at least on a regular basis, but the Rockets are still winning, and that's in large part due to the culture in that locker room, and certainly Chris Paul, a real difference maker that was not there a year ago. Same can be said for PJ Tucker, who had the double-double Saturday night against the Bucks. Anyway, with that win, though, the Rockets have now won 13 in a row, 19 of 20, just a phenomenal stretch of basketball from your hometown basketball team. So, folks, go out and enjoy your Sunday, because the Rockets should be making you feel pretty good about yourselves these days, Houston. Until tomorrow, when the Rockets take on the Jazz, I'll sign off. Look forward to talking with you guys again then from Toyota Center as the Rockets get back in action against the Utah Jazz with a 7 p.m. tip on Monday evening. Until then, have a good day.